Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday morning. This story was front and center in yesterday's news. And for those of you who have students in college, or you were in college yourself, or you want to reflect on how much money you had to borrow when you went to college, it's kind of a knockout story. This sentence from the New York Times yesterday just made me think for a moment. Student loan debt outpaced credit card debt. Can you believe that? For the first time last year, and it is likely to top $1 trillion this year. Two-thirds of bachelor's degree recipients graduated with debt in 2008, compared with less than half in 1993. And last year, graduates who took out loans left college with an average of $24,000 in debt. Default rates are rising, especially among those who attend for-profit universities. There are those who say it's okay to go in debt because it's the best investment you can ever make. You have to graduate from college to get a job that pays a decent amount of money. Others are concerned about having to defer your life if you have debt that's that high. We're going to be talking about the issue the first hour of our program today. Julie Margetta Morgan is a policy analyst with the Post-Secondary Education Program at the Center for American Progress. She worked as an adjunct faculty member and teaching assistant at Boston College while completing a doctoral program in higher education policy. She focuses on how federal law affects educational opportunity and access to higher education, and she is particularly interested in helping low-income students find career opportunities and post-secondary credentials as program coordinator for the Pathways to Success program in New Bedford, Massachusetts. She has a PhD in higher education. She has a law degree, and her BA is in philosophy. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I think we're going to have many on this subject. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you want to send one of those email messages, that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hello, Julie. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Did you have a lot of student debt? You went to school a long time.
I was thinking about whether or not I would confess that on the radio, but yes, in fact, I do have quite a bit of student debt.
You still have
my husband.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So it's personal as well as your knowledge of the topic. I understand. I just found this phenomenal. Who would have thought that student debt would outpace credit card debt? Isn't that something?
It really is. I think credit card debt has slowly been going down over time at the same time that student loans are going up. So that's something to consider. But, college is getting more and more expensive and families are struggling to figure out how to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. There are those who, in analyzing the news yesterday, were saying, well, this isn't a bad kind of debt because in the long run, it's going to help you get a better salary. Can we look at this as a bad kind of debt or a good kind of debt?
When I read people saying that, I always think that they're speaking in really broad terms. And when you think about it on the individual level, the answer to that question is just it's just so different. It varies by the person. I think, we can think about educational debt as good debt, but we also have to remember that that's based on people making good choices about how to spend their money. Taking on debt to pursue a college education is always going to be a bit of a risk, and the payoff of that depends on how good of a choice the student makes.
And tell me what your thoughts are. This is kind of a question about philosophy here. Do you think it's a good idea for all students, no matter how wealthy their families, and we're looking at a class thing here too, I'm sure, because if you've got a lot of money in your family, you don't have to worry about this. If you're a low-income person, you do have to worry about it. You have to take out all kinds of loans. Should everybody, do you think, be required to work to pay for some of their individual college?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think that it's good for individuals to feel some sort of responsibility for paying for college. But, I've spoken to students where that individual responsibility comes just from knowing that someone else is paying for college. So, for example, a student who's on a full scholarship and they know that an individual family is funding that scholarship, they feel a responsibility to, you know, go to class and follow through on what they've started. So I do think that kind of individual responsibility is important, but it can come from different places than working.
Mm-hmm. It does make a difference, I'm sure, though, that if you come from a low-income family and you're taking out a huge amount of debt in order to get through college, you really enter life differently, your graduation, than you do if you don't have any debt.
Oh, yes. Yes, certainly. I think that's a huge consideration. And my biggest worry is that students don't fully understand the burden of that debt when they're taking it on. And I think that's a role for a federal policy. You know, at the same time as we're offering loans that enable people to go to college, the big challenge is getting them to understand the risk of what they're taking on at the time that they take it.
And what is that risk?
Well, that debt will follow these students forever. And if they, you know, aren't able to end up getting employment that would help them pay off the debt, they're going to struggle with this for quite a while.
The other thing that's happening, of course, is the cost of education keeps going up, and will inevitably the next couple of years because of budget problems. So the debt is just going to keep increasing.
Right. Right. That's very true. And although the federal government has done a really good job at making college affordable for low-income students, especially through the Pell Grant program, I think the time is coming that we need to start thinking about how do we hold colleges accountable for their rising costs? You know, what can we do to incentivize them curbing those costs?
And can you look at something specific that all colleges could do to lower those costs pretty immediately, or is it a fairly nuanced, complicated process?
Well, it is a little bit nuanced. There are some people out there, particularly Jane Wellman from the Delta Cost Project, who has done really good work at looking at the costs of college from the institutional perspective and saying, you know, what kind of trends can we see across schools? Why are their costs rising? And we see at public schools, one of the major drivers of rising tuition is decreased public subsidy, of course. And then at private institutions, it's really increased competition for students. So schools are spending more money to try to get students in the door. So between public and private schools, we might look at different solutions for curbing rising tuition. But there, you know, there are some trends across institutions.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea, considering what the employment situation is for college graduates, how long it takes a student to pay off $24,000 in debt, which is the average amount of debt?
Well, the shortest payment plan that a student would choose for paying off their federal student loans would be 10 years. Oftentimes, students now are opting for 20-year plans.
Wow.
So on a 10-year plan, paying off $24,000 would be something around, I think, about $250 a month. And if you go to the 20-year plan, it would be a little bit less than that. But still, you know, for a person who's not, you know, college graduates don't make an excessive amount of money when they first graduate from college. So it's going to be a pretty big chunk of their monthly budget.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that you've been able to look at the employment situation for those who have bachelor's degrees. I just see evidence in the place where I work that people are having to work a couple jobs to make ends meet. I don't know if it's just this profession that there aren't very many jobs and a lot of people who want into those jobs. Is it a fairly decent employment picture for college grads, or is it rough?
I would say it's pretty rough in this economy. You know, I could use the example. I went to law school, and I'm in touch with a lot of people who went to law school, I see the examples in that field of students coming right out of school, competing with students who came out 2 and 3 years ago and still haven't found, you know, that permanent employment. And so there's intense competition not only with the people graduating at the same time that you do, but also with people who graduated in previous years. So, you know, it's a tough time to find a job. And, of course, it varies by region of the country.
Mm-hmm. What is it that has changed so substantially, Julie, from now and 1993? Half the student debt in 1993 than what we have now. That's quite a change here. So it would have been, what, you know, $10,000 debt. What changed?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest changes, of course, has been rising tuition. Another is the availability of student loans. So there have been changes in the student loan program that allow students to take on more debt. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So for a while, the amount of federal loans that a student could take on within their first year of college was severely limited. And so students were seeking work study or employment at the same time that they were going to school. Since then, we've seen studies that show that when students are working over 20 hours a week at the same time that they're going to school, their likelihood of dropping out or not succeeding in college rises steeply. So, you know, for those students, actually taking on more debt is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls. All our phone lines are humming, as you can imagine. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. Let's start our calls with Pat from Green Bay. Hi, Pat.
Good morning. I have a question about the reason why the federal government requires students to list their parents' income even though they are on their own and not getting any funds from their parents. In the instance, it prevented my granddaughter from getting any grants even though she's going to school full-time and working just about full-time. And her friend who has money sitting for her in a trust is getting a free ride to Madison.
That's an interesting question. I can't speak to the specifics of the situation, but, you know, it is possible for students to file for financial aid as an independent. The federal government may also ask for information about family income, but it wouldn't factor into the calculations. But I think there are some flaws in the way that we dole out student aid that oftentimes result in these kinds of situations where you can look and say, you know, well, why did my child's friend get this much money when I only got this much? I think it oftentimes leaves parents feeling as though financial aid is a game rather than a system that's there to help students.
I hadn't heard about a trust thing being able to escape your financial forms. We enter this college experience, though, is it fair to say, assuming that our families will carry some of the financial burden if they can do so, it's their responsibility?
I think increasingly students feel that way. There are many parents who paid for their own way through college and don't feel like they should be paying for their children to go. And now I know the worry is that students who are maybe around my age are carrying their debt into the time when they would be paying for their children to go to college and feel unable to pay for their kids' college tuition. But I do think that there's sort of an expectation that parents should pay, and it becomes even more difficult when those parents are looking at taking out loans. So they're facing, you know, going into retirement and taking on additional debt to pay for their children. It's a difficult choice.
Mm-hmm. It is quite a striking situation that parents may in some cases be paying off still their own student debt when it's time for their students to go to school.
Right. Right, right. That's a window into my future.
Oh, my gosh. Pat, thanks for the call. Daniel in Madison. Hi.
Hi. One of the things that's bothering me related to all this is the demonization of tax and how out of kilter it is where the big tax breaks go to the people who can most afford doing this. I look back historically, what happened after World War II, or actually before the war was over, the GI Bill, and what that did in building the middle class. Now we're tearing it down, and part of it is the education cost that families have to deal with. And I think there's some solutions to that tax-wise, and it's going to be a monumental thing to educate the public about that. But also, there is too little chances for students to be able to relieve their debt by doing particular type of work. Like, I know there's teacher corps, that's great, but it's so limited how many people can get into that. But there should be just tons of programs where they give something to the society with their work, and that helps relieve the college debt that they have. We, by far, don't do enough of that, and where the whole society would benefit. So a combination of intelligent tax policy, but also using the talent of these young people, you know, to relieve their debt by doing meaningful work that contributes to society.
Julie.
I think the caller is right that there are things that we can do on the tax policy side to, you know, either bolster programs like Pell or make tax credits work better for low-income and lower-middle-income families. But as far as programs that help relieve debt burden, there is a program called Income-Based Repayment that the federal government pushed through in the last version of the Higher Education Act. That does help to relieve that burden somewhat. So depending on a student's income, they'll pay a fraction of the student loan payment that they would have otherwise if they qualify for the program. And then students who go into public service jobs or they work as a teacher or they work for a 501c3 company can get debt forgiveness after 10 years of payments. So that's an excellent program. Unfortunately, you know, the flaw with a program like that is that a student won't necessarily know whether or not they'd qualify for it until after they've already taken on the loans. So it's very difficult for a parent or a student looking at college to know whether or not that's something that'll be available to them.
Can you tell me a little more about Pell Grants, how important they have been, how they're faring in the current round of budget cuts?
Sure. The Pell Grant program is an extremely successful federal program in helping, as the last caller said, to build the middle class and to help low-income students get into college. Unfortunately, each year it's a struggle to pay for the Pell Grant program. We want the maximum Pell Grant to sort of keep up with rising tuition so that students who qualify for Pell can use it in a meaningful way. So through the last round of budget negotiations, the Pell Grant program fared pretty well. We will see some cuts to a recent addition to Pell, which was the year-round Pell Grant or summer Pell Grant program that allowed a student to take out additional Pell funding to pay for summer courses. So it's unfortunate that we're going to lose that portion of the program, but losing that helps us to maintain the maximum Pell Grant, which is just a really important source of funding.
We're going to continue taking phone calls. We're talking this hour about the news story that surfaced yesterday that student loan debt has now outpaced credit card debt for the first time. The average amount of money that graduates who took out loans face when they leave college is $24,000. And we're discussing what that means for their lives and asking a question, does it need to be so? Julie Margetta Morgan is a policy analyst with the Post-Secondary Education Program at the Center for American Progress. She has also been a teaching assistant at Boston College while completing a doctoral program in higher education policy. Our lines have been filled. There's one line open right now, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. We do want to let you know, and we'll be on this story tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We looked at Congressman Ryan's Path to Prosperity plan yesterday. Today, President Obama is going to be laying out his vision for lowering the national debt. He's expected to include cuts to Medicare and Medicaid and an end to Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. After 1 o'clock in a news special from NPR, join host Neil Conan and hear substantial excerpts from the president's speech, analysis, and reaction. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, Sean Korn will be joining us, an internationally celebrated yoga teacher who came to yoga from a very interesting path, but she has also done phenomenal work all over the world. She does yoga work and raises money for adolescent prostitutes. She is a champion for those who are young people who need AIDS awareness education. She raises funds. She spreads national awareness about the global emergency of HIV/AIDS affecting children throughout the world. And she has done work in Africa and India and Cambodia and many places of the world. She's quite an extraordinary person. So that's hour number two. Back to phone calls as we look at student debt the first hour. Chris from Poinette is next. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like your guest to talk about the issue of oversight a little bit. I've had a horrible, horrible, horrible long 25-year battle with the University of Wisconsin system, and I lost my house and all my stuff was stolen. And let me just give you a little vita. I was a Steinbach Scholar in Music at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a Leighton Scholar in Art at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I was supposed to get the Elang Doctoral Fellowship, and I made the mistake of reporting a horrible sexual harassment and discrimination problem at UWM. It was a Wisconsin legislative audit, a U.S. labor investigation, and a covered-up U.S. Department of Justice investigation. And four times I tried to get the U.S. Department of Ed to come in. And maybe she could talk a little bit about the structure of the Department of Ed. And this also segues back to a really important issue that Vice President Biden brought up in his big topic in the New York Times over the course of the past week or two, also, is that you have absolutely no rights not to pay back your student loans if you've had a horrific, horrific situation. My fellowship got yanked. I was pilloried and punished. The Regents put a lien on my house and took it away from me, and I have been completely unable to get any justice in this. And for the
all right, I'm not sure. This is a pretty complicated issue, and it sounds horrendous for you. Can you pick up any part of that that deals with student debt? If you're in a situation
Sure.
where you're contesting something that's happened, do you have to pay your student debt?
Sure. What I will say is that one of the things the Department of Education is working on right now is trying to figure out what its role should be in sort of mediating disputes between colleges and students over student loan issues. So there is a student loan ombudsman at the federal level who can, they won't step in, but they'll help solve situations between students and institutions. And the Federal Student Aid Office has instituted a customer experience officer who is also going to sort of be looking at, you know, the federal government is the provider of the student loans, but it's really a relationship between the school and the student. And so how can the federal government make that process easier for students?
Let's go to Mark next in Door County. Hi, Mark.
Thank you so much for taking my call. You've been very generous with me. My issue is not so much the debt, but I imagine that there's a great amount of default on those debts with the current economy.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, is the college held accountable for students who default on their debts?
That's a really interesting question, actually. So student loan defaults overall are, you know, fairly low. In a two-year period, they're about 7%. Over a three-year period, they go up to about 13%. But we see much, much higher defaults at for-profit colleges. So some of your listeners might be familiar with the debate over for-profit colleges that's going on in Washington right now. Essentially, these institutions have a high proportion of Pell-eligible students. Their students take on significant loan debt, and we have pretty substantial questions about whether or not students are able to make incomes after they graduate that would help them to pay back those loans. And so the federal government is looking right now at whether or not institutions should be held accountable for their student loan default rates. And so that is a big question in Washington right now. So at least for for-profit colleges, we'll hopefully see that those schools will be held accountable to a certain extent for the students' inability to pay back the loans after graduation.
So you think that the college itself, won't that discourage college colleges from taking low-income students, though?
Well, the way the regulations are being worked up so far, they're pretty reasonable. The Department of Education is taking into account the fact that the colleges don't have, you know, total control over whether or not students default on their loans. But within reason, we can sort of see that when there's a huge pattern of student loan default at a particular school, there's something going wrong at that institution. So I don't think it'll necessarily have an effect on whether or not the schools take on low-income students because of the way the regulations are being written.
Thank you, Mark, very much for the call. And when you talk about the schools being held accountable, meaning they're financially accountable, that they will have to pay back the debt here or part of the debt, or what does it mean?
No, it would just mean that they would either lose eligibility or have their enrollments frozen for subsequent years. So
I see.
Having a high default rate among students or a low repayment rate on loans would put in jeopardy their ability to take part in the federal aid programs in future years.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, very much for your call. Jim in Turtle Lake. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a different question, but I on the subject you were just talking about, I really think a lot of these for-profit colleges that advertise a lot are just a scam to get the Pell Grants and the loans. I think there should be more credibility. But my question is, I have one student that graduated from UW-Madison and one that's a junior in kinesiology. Now they're talking about breaking off from the UW system. Now, is that going to be beneficial to the students there as far as, and what will that do to tuition at Madison? Will it make a difference, or will it?
Yeah, I'm not sure Julie can answer that because she's not from Madison. But if you can just answer this generally of what's happening with tuition at public institutions all over the country.
Sure. And the Madison example has sort of become a emblematic nationwide of what.
All right, you do know about Madison. Good for you.
a little bit.
<All right. laughs>
For a Wisconsin audience, I won't claim to know too much.
Okay.
So at Madison, we're seeing that the school is going to get more autonomy from the state, which it has always wanted, but they're also going to have to be subject to some budget cuts. And so there's an open question as to how those kinds of budget cuts would affect tuition. You know, typically we see when public subsidies recede, tuition increases. So that's always a concern. And when we're talking about a public college system, it's really important to think about what that system was meant to achieve for the state. So traditionally it was that taxpayers subsidized the education of students, and those students would go out and work within the state and improve the workforce and economy of that state. Now that we see those public subsidies shrinking, we've opened up that question again of what's the purpose of this system and who should be paying for it.
Right. Thank you, Jim. Unless you had something else, Jim?
And also, I was wondering, you know, if you're there's a catch-22. If you're in a middle class where you don't qualify for anything but unsubsidized loans, it almost makes it tougher than, I don't know, maybe not, but it almost makes it tougher if your income was a little lower, you'd be a little better off. I mean, there's a area in there where there's nothing except in that. I know if we didn't help, I don't think my kids could go.
Mm-hmm.
Help a lot. And we have to sacrifice a lot. And I'm willing to do that if they're willing to do it. But sometimes it just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, I mean, I do speak to a lot of families who are struggling with this issue and do feel as though they've been caught in the middle. They don't make enough money to save the full cost of tuition, but they don't qualify for significant aid. And I think these are the families that we really need to help out when they're looking at making choices about where to go to college. That's something I think about often when I look at this, the burden of college loan debt, is that we need to help families figure out how to go to college smarter, you know, how to take advantage of the public school system, take advantage of getting advanced placement credits before they enter, using online courses to decrease the cost of education. Yes, there are families who are really feeling the squeeze of this, and they need help from the government, not just in the form of financial resources, but also in the form of information.
Thank you, Jim, so much for your call. Karen in Green Bay, hi.
Hi there. I just have a comment. My son went to architectural school. He went to school for 6 years. When he got out, he had $90,000 worth of school debt.
Ooh.
And could not go into his profession because a new starting architect is not going to make the kind of money that's going to be able to pay for something like that. So he didn't even get to use his degree. And I just think that it's just awful that that happened.
Is he using his degree now, Karen?
No. No. Oh. He's still paying his debt off. He's only 28, so.
Oh.
So he never got to be an architect because he had all that debt. So it really, that's something I wish, I don't know how it can be fixed or what the solution is, but I wish there was something there.
Is there something, Julie?
Well, I think it's something that, I think the challenge is to get students to think about this before they go into college. So not only to think about, what are my loan payments going to be when I graduate, but how would those payments affect my ability to work in my chosen field, live where I'd like to live, get married, buy a car, buy a house, all these things that we hope that our children will be able to do. Students need better information about this. They need guidance, and potentially they need better debt counseling while they're in school. So I wonder if a student like that, if someone had come to them in their freshman or sophomore year of college and given them information about alternatives to taking on the debt and counseled them about the effects of taking it on, what kind of impact that might have had.
What field is he working in now, Karen?
Retail.
Retail. So he's going to have a long... That doesn't pay all that well, does it? Or has he secured a really good-paying job?
He was able to secure a good-paying
good.
Job because he had been with the company since he was 16. He worked his way all through school.
Oh.
And okay. Having a degree helped him, go higher in the company. But he's still, he's doing very well and actually is happy. So that did luck out to be a good thing. But his first dream was to be an architect.
Right, of course.
And now he's not going to be able to ever do it, which is really too bad.
Yeah. But,
and maybe she's right. Yeah. Maybe I think having some counseling or whatever would have helped a lot. Hindsight's always 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you very much.
Thanks, Karen. Well, at least he's working at a well-paying job. That's good.
It's true. And I think that one of the things that we forget when thinking about college is that for many people, it's a one-time purchase, right? So that student doesn't get to make that decision again. Hindsight is 20/20, but there's no way to use that hindsight. So we really need to think about how to help people make these choices, knowing that they probably won't be able to get a do-over.
Right. $90,000, though. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Leslie in Preston, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I guess my comment would be that I don't understand. It kind of makes me feel skeptical of the high costs of colleges and why something isn't being done, because it seems so obvious that something could be done. Minnesota, I think Wisconsin also has a post-secondary enrollment option that allows students in high school, juniors and seniors, to overlap with college classes. So in their junior and senior year, they're taking like classes at a junior college or at a college online to receive their credits for college. So actually when they graduate from high school, they are also graduating with an AA degree or a two-year degree of some sort that is totally paid by the tuition that would ordinarily go to their high school. And the kids come out with 2 years ahead and no loans, and then they can go on for their 2 years to make their bachelor's degree or whatever at another, at a college beyond that, and only have the 2 years to pay for. And you touched on that a little bit with your answer to Jim and also with someone else's answer, but it, to me it seems like the education should be at the freshman and sophomore level of high school, where the kids are told, okay, guys, this is your options. If you want to focus on what you want to be and focus more towards college credits now, you can save 2 years down the road and two and half of your college debt.
Mm-hmm. Julie.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The dual enrollment programs where students are taking college classes while they're in high school are becoming very popular as a way to deal with the cost of college. This particular version of a dual enrollment program is, to me, the ideal, where the classes are paid for with that high school sort of tuition, so to speak. Other programs require parents to pay for the college classes while the student is in high school, and that, of course, runs into access issues for lower-income families. Another issue that comes up is that not every high school is located close to a college, and so you have issues with scaling dual enrollment programs. But for students who can take part, they're an excellent option, and they really do cut down on the cost of college. And I couldn't agree more that we need to start giving people advice about this much, much earlier. So starting in middle school, getting families acclimated to the fact that they're going to have to make this choice about college, and helping them sort of understand what's involved in that choice, so that by the time they get to high school and need to make the choice, they're sort of immersed in the language of college admissions and the ideas of how that choice will affect their career paths and their income and things like that.
Thank you, Leslie, very much for your call. We are talking this hour about student loan debt, which has now outpaced credit card for the first time last year. The average amount of money that students are facing in terms of paying off their debt is $24,000, half of what it was in 1993. So what's up with all of this? Our guest this hour is explaining, and we're welcoming your many phone calls. Julie Morgan is a policy analyst with the Post-Secondary Education Program at the Center for American Progress. She has worked as an adjunct faculty member and teaching assistant at Boston College. She does have a law degree, and she does have student debt. So she speaks from personal experience. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up later today, President Obama is going to be laying out his vision for lowering the national debt. And at 1 o'clock in a news special from National Public Radio, please join Neil Conan and hear substantial excerpts from the presidential speech, and you'll get analysis and reaction. So that's today at 1 o'clock. Hour number two of the program, this young woman who's become a master yoga teacher and has taken her wisdom to work with people who are the poorest of the poor and facing all kinds of health problems all over the world. She's quite something. So that's coming up. Our next caller is Ralph in Little Suamico. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, hi. Thank you for getting me on before the program was over.
Sure.
Just wanted to add something I don't think that's come up, and that is the role of banks in these student loans. When I look at the one that my son did when he started school at UW-Green Bay, the lender name is Charter One Bank. Okay, so a bank has money coming for interest, I assume, and they also have a guarantee that they won't lose any money because the government's going to back them up. So the bank doesn't really have any skin in the game, and so there's no incentive for them to be careful of who they loan the money to, since taxpayer is going to pay it anyhow. So it looks like we've got a similar thing that we had with the house mortgages, where there's profit being made in the middle. And it kind of gets covered up. It's very hard to find out who actually is holding that money and collecting interest on it.
Julie.
Well, actually, the federal government in the last 2 years, made a switch over to direct federal lending on student loans. So whereas there used to be a middleman who was doling out the loans with sort of government backing on the debt, we've cut out that middleman now, and it actually saved the government quite a bit of money and has allowed us a little bit more freedom in other programs. So we're not quite in that situation anymore.
Thanks, Ralph. Dave is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. I went to school in UW-Whitewater, graduated May 09, ended up graduating with almost $29,000 in debt, and I only just have a couple thousand of that paid off right now. After graduating, moved to Milwaukee, figured it's the largest city in the state, got to have the most jobs, right? Lived there for a year and a half as a last resort for a full-time job that paid at least $10 an hour because they can't get a job without any work experience. I moved back to Whitewater to work at my old college job, getting paid $10 an hour.
What's your degree in, Dave?
I ended up graduating with liberal studies, but I had several different majors. But from what I was told, going into that, the professor that was the head of the liberal studies degree said that employers are looking for diverse people that have diverse backgrounds and are adaptable. But now that's not really the case. They're looking for specific training and job experience. And if I could have gone back, I would have gone to a tech school or just gone right into the workforce right out of high school.
Hmm.
Just feel that that college tuition is just a big hole in my pocket.
Julie.
That's so interesting. I really feel for your particular situation, and I hope that it improves over time. But, in Washington, we often have conversations about what types of skills do we need students to have when they graduate from college. And of course, as this caller has seen, specific skills can be really important for that first job. But on the other hand, the sort of soft skills that a student might learn in a more liberal arts program can pay off over time. So communication skills, leadership, the ability to adapt and innovate, these are all things that we also want students to have. So it's very difficult from a policy perspective to help guide students into programs that will give them both the skills they need for the job of today and the skills they'll need for a lifetime of employment. The concern with very specific skills is that students will sort of burn through the value of those skills within the first couple of years and not be able to use them to advance in their careers.
It's interesting what he said about technical school, because I don't think we pay enough attention to the value of tech school, and some people who want to enter the workforce right away with a set of skills. There are openings for many of those positions, right? We need to thoroughly examine tech school as an option for a lot of people.
It's very true. There was a study, I believe, in Florida that showed that students who did one-year certificate programs in particular fields that were in high demand were making more when they graduated than students who had gotten associate's degrees, which, of course, cost them more. So there's, at that sort of lower level of education, the shorter degree programs,
mm-hmm,
or certificate programs, there's tremendous opportunity for students to make really smart decisions about how they spend their money and the payoff that they're going to get. But of course, as we've seen with the for-profit colleges, it really, really depends on the institution the student attends, and the degree or certificate program that they choose. So that's our challenge, is how to get people information about which ones are in high demand and which are not.
Thanks, Dave. Jerry in Little Chute. Hi.
Hi. Well, I listen throughout the day, and sometimes I find it interesting how different stories kind of touch on each other. And I heard a comment earlier that I thought was kind of interesting, and then to be talking about college loan debt and the value of college right now kind of highlights that for me. But in the earlier show that was talking about how well Governor Walker has done, one of the things that was talked about is his big drive to create jobs. And in the special, he mentioned his push to create manufacturing jobs because he feels they're sort of the heart of Wisconsin and the middle class. And manufacturing jobs don't really line up with going to college, in my mind, in my experience. They're more for people who haven't taken that route. So it's a big push to create jobs in, you know, in Wisconsin, and I don't know how that, you know, what the push is nationally, but I know there is a push everywhere to create jobs. But is it even worth it to go to college if the jobs that are going to be coming out are and that are being pushed are not college-level jobs? Maybe it's not even should you go to college for tech school or this or 4-year or 2-year. Maybe it's just not even going to become worth it with all that debt to go to college at all anymore. And is that something that people are talking about?
Julie.
Sure. I think there are two points that are relevant to your question. One is that when we talk about college or post-secondary education, we're not necessarily always talking about bachelor's degrees. So within manufacturing jobs, there is a need for some post-secondary education, whether, you know, it could just be a sort of quick training program that would retrain a worker from one area of manufacturing into another. Those are most often done through community colleges and these sort of regional agreements that, you know, it's really important to encourage that regional coordination between community colleges and employers in, you know, manufacturing or in other fields. The other is that in terms of national trends, we know that the jobs of the future are going to require some post-secondary education. So although we might see growth in some areas that require no post-secondary ed, on the whole, we're going to need a lot more workers who have some post-secondary education. But as we said earlier, that could be a certificate program. It could be a, you know, 3-month training course, or it could be a bachelor's or an associate's degree.
So how do we get all this information, and are we way off the mark in not communicating what the jobs are, where the jobs are, what college education or not college education is needed? Is there a central place of information for this that we're disseminating to our high school students, or doesn't that exist? Is it all just haphazard?
Well, It's a bit haphazard as of now. So right now, a student could get very good information about the outlook for certain jobs through the Occupational Outlook Handbook on the Department of Labor's website. Department of Labor is also developing another website that would be a little bit more user-friendly and would link to jobs within particular areas. Mm. On the post-secondary side, we have the College Navigator website that the Department of Ed runs. I find it a little bit unwieldy for a student because oftentimes it has more information than they actually need. But there are other sites like collegeboard.com that would give them very good information about particular colleges. At the Center for American Progress, we're pushing for more user-friendly information for students. So there are a couple of things that I think would be really useful to students. One would be to take that job data, salary data, average debt data, and put it where students are already looking. So put it on the front page of students of college websites, put it on enrollment forms at colleges, on the admissions materials that get sent out to families so that they don't have to go looking for it and that they're not going to end up after college saying, "Ooh, I wish I had gotten that information before I applied." And then another is to make information standardized and comparable across institutions. So CAP, along with a couple of other organizations, have really been pushing for standardized tables on financial aid letters so that a family can sit down with the financial aid packages from the, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 colleges to which the student has been accepted and look across them and know just at a glance how much more one would cost compared to another. It's surprisingly difficult to figure that out from the letters as they're formatted now. So, you know, there are definitely ways to improve the kind of information that students get.
That was very helpful. Camille, we have about a minute left, everybody, from Frankfort, Michigan. Hi, Camille.
Hi, I'll be quick. When I was paying off my, after I paid off my loan, which took a long, long time, I was told that that the most expensive educations, doctors and lawyers, were finding ways to not pay off their loans. And for that reason, extra fees and things were being added on to the end of my loan. But I was not supposed to be told that. So when I protested, they didn't do it. What I want to know is it still possible that kind of thing is happening?
Well, I have debt from law school, and I haven't yet figured out how to foist it onto someone else, so I'm not really sure. I've never heard of a program like that. There are probably programs out there that are available to help educate people on how to pay down their loans in a smart way, and it's possible that some people take advantage of those better than others, so it's definitely worth looking into. But I don't think there's a way to get out of it, mm-hmm. or else I'd really like to find it.
Julie, all the best to you in your work and in paying
thank
off
you.
Your student debt, too. And thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Julie Morgan is a policy analyst with the Post-Secondary Education Program at the Center for American Progress. You may want to go there. They have more information about what we've been talking about, AmericanProgress.org. And she also recommended the Department of Labor. I would imagine you're going to have to navigate around that site to find the kinds of jobs that are available in this country right now. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour, and thanks to Chrissy as well for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We'll have news coming up in just one moment, and then we will return with another hour of, I think it's going to be a real interesting conversation with a remarkable young woman right after the news.